Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Streetwives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. So tonight, before I begin with my wonderful guest, Chris, I just wanted to make a couple of announcements. Last week, we canceled the show due to a death of one of our members, Carol, who was a very big part of our support network, and we lost her very suddenly, and her loss was very impactful on most of the people who are part of the support network. So we send true, sincere love to her family and to Carol, whose spirit will be with us always, for her great compassion, sense of humor, and determination. It was a major blow to all of us, and that's why we canceled our show for last week. Moving forward to the future, I just want to let people know we are going to have another healing weekend here in Philadelphia in April. Details will be going out in my upcoming newsletter. The newsletter is running a little late due to some changes I'm making in it, and just because of all the havoc of the past week or so in the loss of Carol, you know, just held things up. But it will be coming out in the next week. And so you can read about there with the healing weekend. And it will be in Philadelphia the end of April. If you're interested, please send me an email at bonk@aol.com. And I'll be happy to give you the information about it. We'll be speaking a little bit about our healing weekends in a moment as I introduce my guest, Chris. Chris, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Bonnie. Glad to be back.
Well, Chris, you're always one very inspirational person to our group as well, and including when you come on our show, so many women give me such wonderful feedback on how helpful you are to them because you've gone through your own set of horrible nightmares and turned the worst of everything in life into the best for yourself. which is not an easy accomplishment because a lot of women just don't do it as well as you do it, but you're very determined to find the happiness you are looking for. And in spite of all the obstacles that faced you, you found them. But before we start talking to you about you, I know, Chris, you've come to two of our healing weekends, and maybe you could say a word to women on how important they are when you're going through this process to have this kind of support.
Absolutely. The first healing weekend I went to was right before my divorce was final, or actually, no, I guess just a couple of weeks after my divorce was final, and it was the first time I'd seen other straight wives in person, and it was just mind-blowing to be in a room full of dozens of women who'd had very similar experiences and to hear from them how similar so many of our husbands were. I didn't do a lot of talking that first weekend because I couldn't. I was still so rattled by the whole experience. But I was glad I went, and I made some friends that I still talk to very regularly. And then just this past year, I came back for another healing weekend because you had one less than an hour from where I live, so how could I turn that down? And that was also just really an uplifting weekend, a time to kind of step back and see the progress in my life and the lives of some of these women that I'd met before or that I'd been talking to just online. And it was just a very uplifting, very positive experience.
I think I think you could agree with this, that until you come to a gathering where you have so many straight wives, you know, it is very overwhelming because you do feel like you're the only one or you're isolated. And even if you have support online, which is wonderful, it's really different when you actually meet the people in person and see live bodies, live motions, you know, common lifestyles, common that we have as straight wives, right?
Absolutely. It was also important for me to see that although our husbands were very similar in a lot of ways, we aren't necessarily all that similar. You know, we come from many different backgrounds and have different perspectives on just about anything in life. So it said to me, there's not a thing that's wrong with you. You know, you're not in a room full of people who are just like you, who are a bunch of people who would fall for this. You happen to step in it. That was very reassuring.
But I think there was a sense of similarity, even though we are from different nationalities, background, races, cultures, many different types of backgrounds like that. We did have very many of the same similar qualities as far as being caretakers, as far as being loving women who want to do everything possible to make a marriage work, even when it's falling apart, and who will go to any extreme to do things, even outside the realm of any expectations we would ever think of before we get married, just to try to keep things together. And I think that you see a lot of that
true.
At these weekends, right?
Definitely, definitely, you do. I think that's one of the things that a lot of our friends that we know out in the rest of our normal lives can't understand, because when they find out that we're leaving because of all this mess or maybe we're staying and trying to make things work, a lot of women, their first response is, oh, I wouldn't put up with that. But you can't know that because, of course, none of us, very few of us, I think, went into these marriages with both eyes open and knowing what was really going on. So by the time you've figured it out, you're up to your eyeballs in alligators. And it does, it puts you in a position where you'll do just about anything to make it work. Because, of course, none of us went into our marriages thinking it was, you know, a cheap commit. We were all going to make it work.
It's funny, I was having this conversation today with one of our, you know, what I call straight sisters from our group. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about, you know, we're a little bit older than you. But, you know, the thing is that we were saying that when you first meet somebody and you go out with them, even if you had suspicions that something might be off, even if there was a suspicion of a past encounter or involvement with a man, if he would have told you or you knew for sure, would you have married him anyway? And you know, I think a lot of times women beat themselves up because they just don't understand the gay thing. And I know that I certainly had suspicions before I got married, and it would not have stopped me because I didn't understand it. I thought that, you know, if it's a choice and you're choosing me, well, you must have experimented or done something when you were younger, and it didn't work out, and you fell in love with me, so this is who you're going to be. So
makes sense, doesn't it?
It does to me. Now, did that make sense to you?
Well, my ex, he didn't say anything about having experiences with other men until we had been married many, many years. When I was dating him, he didn't talk about any of that. But he had other things in his life, alcohol abuse and drug use and things like that, that he said used to be problems, but were no longer. So it took him
that. That made sense, right?
It totally made sense. You know, he had a past, and lots of people do, and he wasn't doing those things, as far as I knew, anymore. So I just assumed, I took him at his word. What else are you going to do with somebody that you're going to marry, right? If you didn't trust them, you wouldn't marry them, would you?
Well, it wasn't even so much that, Chris. I mean, I couldn't wrap my head around the thought. I mean, mine never said anything to me, but somebody else had suggested it. And when I asked him about it, of course, he got very angry and nearly threw a chair over, you know, because he said there is just no way. And I was so relieved to hear his denials that, you know, I just went happily into that marriage. But even if I had known that there was maybe an incident prior to the marriage, I would have still not married him. I would have thought, well, I grew up in the years when there was sexual experimentation, and, you know, during the 60s and 70s where people were trying everything and anything. I was out in California where people had orgies as a regular thing. I mean, I never attended any of them because, you know, I just felt, you know, I was not into that. But it certainly wasn't something that was a rarity. It was something that was pretty rampant out there. So I thought there was a lot of kinds of sexual experimentation, but people pretty well were defined in who they were. So even if they experimented, they knew they were gay, they were gay. And they experimented and they wanted to get married, then they were straight. So to me, it was just like maybe you had some kind of experimentation, but you want to marry me, you can perform sex with me, how could you possibly be gay? And that was my thinking. And
well,
I think,
you know,
for a lot of us,
it
is your thinking.
Huh?
I
think that's pretty ironclad logic, really. You know, if
somebody that's what made sense
marry
to me.
You, what else are you going to think?
And this is why I think so many women are confused for so long, because of the fact that they go into these relationships hoping and thinking that things are going to be better or different than what they are, or that their husbands love them enough so they could change, and they just kind of miss the whole point here, is that we don't understand homosexuality. I mean, the guys themselves don't even understand it. They're hoping it's going to change. I really do believe in my heart that almost all of these men, you know, go into these marriages loving their wives to the best of their ability that they can as a gay man, which is not the same as loving a woman as a straight man, and hoping beyond hope that it's going to work, that just being loved by someone enough is going to work. And I do think that there is a prototype of a woman that they look for, similar to you, me, and all the other women that we've met through our network, women who are kind, who are understanding, who just in case things don't work out, at least they'll have some kind of ally in the woman or support system. So I think they, on some level, consciously, not consciously, seek us out because they know that, you know, we're safe, that we're going to be a
and
safe zone for them.
And I definitely was a safe person. Yeah.
Do you feel the same way?
You know, I listened to his every word. I trusted him. I believed what he had to say. And if I saw something that didn't fit with what he said, I figured I just was observing incorrectly. I gave him the benefit of the doubt more than I did myself. And I think that's a very common among our group.
Now, did you ever question him and have him say, you must be out of your mind or you must be imagining things?
Not early on.
Mm-hmm.
He, I, he had a great excuse for not being all that interested in having sex with me because he was very religious when I met him, and of course we weren't allowed to do anything until after we got married.
Were you religious also?
I converted for him. I had not been very religious, but I dove in head first to be married to this bride.
It didn't seem like it was anything that would be off base for a guy who was religious not to want to be that involved in sex, right?
Right. I figured once we got married, you know, we would be off to the races. Then, of course, that's not at all what happened. But by then, I had gotten so used to submitting to him as a good Christian wife that I didn't really have any room to argue with him about the things that I observed.
So I know that a number of our women who we've met, you know, especially at our last healing weekend, we had our, you know, coach join us, Suzette, you know, Vernon. And she's always very inspirational when she's on our show. Meeting her in person was really a wonderful experience for me, you know, after all these years, finally getting to hug her in person. And Suzette always says that she came from a strict Southern Baptist background where religion was highly influential as far as what people's expectations were, and they could, in some way or another, you know, somehow justify all the misactions in a marriage because it was done in a religious way in the name of God. So I think that was a common bond that a lot of women that we met have. Would you say so?
Absolutely. If your role as a wife is to be unquestioning and obedient and submissive and subservient in all things, and his job is to love you, right? And so if you don't feel like you're getting that love, well, that's a shame, but how can you complain about it? Because complaining about your husband or to your husband is wrong. So you just have to kind of suck it up and hope that things get better. And I think that's lousy marital advice in general, but it's impossible advice when the person that you're married to is hiding the fact that they are never going to be interested in you.
And I think that's a very major part of this, is that you're reading all the wrong signals. And I think that a lot of times you're looking at that person, and when he's giving you a message, you're internalizing it and listening to the lies that he's telling you. Did you find yourself in that situation of blaming yourself?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was very easy to blame myself because he would tell me straight out that I was far too interested in that sort of thing to be a decent woman, and that I was, you know, wanting too much of his time, wanting too much of his attention. I was too focused on sex and romance and all those other things, that I had an unrealistic idea of what marriage was supposed to be. And so, you know, it was all my fault. And then later, of course, I was too busy taking care of the children, and that was unpleasant for him, or I was gaining weight and that wasn't good enough for him, or, you know, he always came up with something that I was doing wrong to give me plenty of stuff to chew over and think it was all my fault.
And did you?
Sure, I did. I did for a long time. And it wasn't until toward the end of my marriage when I started talking to other men, straight men, that I realized that I wasn't an abnormal woman, and I wasn't an unattractive woman. I was just married to a man who really didn't care about me all that much at all.
So how long did it take you to figure out what the real truth was, Chris?
More than 20 years. I was married to him for 20 years before I realized. And even then, it was I really tried hard not to see the truth. I don't know why I was so resistant to it. But, it was only when several men that I talked to about what my husband was doing said, there's no way a straight man would do that, that I finally was able to acknowledge that maybe that was the problem.
Mm-hmm. And did you confront him?
I did, and he alternated between fury at me for such a wild and unfounded accusation, and every once in a while he would kind of quietly admit that, yeah, this was the issue, but he always left room for himself to walk that back and say he never really said that.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is another common trait that we find, right?
Absolutely. Gaslighting is just the most effective tool that these guys have. They get you to where you don't believe anything in your own head, so you're clinging to whatever they say as truth. And they're lying to you because it benefits them, but all you have in your life is that lie.
I know. It's really sad because, you know, I think about Carol, to get back to her, how she spent so many years of her life. You know, at 73, she passed away 2 weeks before she was going to be free in her new life. And, you know, many times that she said to me how she felt so bad about herself, how she blamed herself for the, you know, what was going wrong in her marriage, how, you know, her husband would call her all kinds of names and berate her for her weight and for, you know, what she was, how she talked, how she walked, what she looked like. And it all had nothing to do with anything. I mean, it just had to do with protecting themselves.
Right.
And I think that's kind of what it's about. You know, they don't care how they're hurting you. And I think this is what they don't understand. You know, they think they're just protecting themselves without realizing how they're hurting you.
I think for some, yes, that's true. I think in my ex-husband's case, I think he liked that it hurt me. I think he found that very satisfying.
Right. And that's not to say that all gay husbands are like that. But some are.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just the nature of some of these men, many of whom are narcissists or who are, you know, have antisocial behavior and has nothing to do with because they're gay. I mean, it's their personality disorder that they have that goes with it. And
right.
I think a lot of times when they're living this kind of a lie, you know, it's very, you know, over a long period of time, it just becomes inherent in their personality. So if you live a lie every single day of your life and have to always lie, then I think lying becomes a very easy thing to do. Then you just start lying about anything. Did you find that in your marriage?
Yes, he lied about things and hid things. He had no reason to hide. He always had secrets that I would find out about years later. Or he would have things that he would tell me one version of events, and he would tell his coworkers a different version of events. Not that it mattered. They weren't necessarily important things that were going on. He just never told everybody the same story.
I mean, your husband was one who, over the years that I've known you, I guess the best way, if I had to kind of describe the situation, was that he was there to, what I would call, crush your spirit. Because he
yeah.
felt that if he could crush your spirit, then you wouldn't be able to stand up for yourself at all and just submit to do whatever he wants you to do. Does that kind of summarize it, do you think?
Yes, I mean, in the beginning, you know, I was young and he didn't have to crush all that hard. You know, I was willing to make whatever accommodations he wanted. But, yeah, once I became a middle-aged woman with, you know, opinions and desires of my own, he had to work really hard on making me know that that was not my place. I wasn't allowed to have a life.
So let me ask you this question, Chris. When you left the marriage, I mean, you left a lot behind, but you knew you had to get out to save yourself, which you did. And at that point, you were pretty wounded. You know, and like I say, the fact you had the strength to stand up and say, I deserve to have better than this, took a lot of courage at that point of your life, where a lot of people just don't find that courage. What do you think it is that gave you that courage?
Toward the end, my ex-husband was pushing very hard for me to participate in his gay fantasies. He wanted to watch me have sex with men of his choosing. And I realized after months of him badgering me into doing this that I wanted to die. I didn't want to live like I was living. And I was also weighing, you know, what would I have to do to be able to fulfill his demands? And, I mean, it's a lot more complicated story than that. He would tell me he wanted to do these things, and then he would say, oh, no, I was just talking. You should have known that was just sexy talk. Nobody would actually mean that, and any normal person would know that I was just kidding. And then a couple weeks later, he would come right back at it. So I realized I was not in control of my own life, and I was dealing with a man who did not love me at all. It was not possible that he cared for me, because I wouldn't treat me the way he treated me. I wouldn't treat anyone that way if I had an ounce of respect for them. So I went through a very dark period of just thinking, I just have to get through today, and realizing that that was all I had. Was, you know, ticking off another day on the calendar, and I realized that was no way to live.
Was it a decision that took a lot of time to come to bear, or was it something that relatively quickly happened?
It was an extremely difficult and long process that honestly started when we first were married. I mean, you know, on our honeymoon, things weren't normal. And I was on the beach in Jamaica by myself, because he wasn't with me for most of our honeymoon, thinking I should just get on a plane and go home and divorce him right now, you know. But I didn't. I stayed, and I made it kind of work for a long time. But once I realized what was really going on, the decision to leave was the only correct decision. I knew I had to do it. And it took me years to get out after I made that decision, because I'd been staying at home, raising my children, homeschooling my children for years. So I didn't really have a career. I didn't have any connections out in the working world, and I couldn't afford an apartment. So it took me a few years to act on my decision. But the decision itself was very clear.
I always tell women that before you can become physically free, you have to first become emotionally free. And it doesn't mean that you can leave as soon as you're emotionally free. You have to have a game plan. But as long as you make that decision that this is not how I want to live anymore, this is not within my realm of how I can live anymore, that emotional decision to end a marriage, as difficult as it is, it does give you a sense of freedom and give you the push that you need to start making a plan. Would you say that's true?
That's absolutely true. I lived with my ex-husband for several years after I decided that I had to leave. And for most of that time, he knew I was planning on leaving. And I stopped doing all the things that I used to do as a wife. You know, I didn't pay attention to him. I didn't call him in sick when he was hungover anymore. I didn't cook for him. I didn't sleep in the same bedroom with him. And he would say, "You're my wife. We're married." And I would look at him and say, "On paper, and that's it."
Uh-huh.
And it shocked him, because I had been so obedient and compliant for two decades.
Mm-hmm.
But being able to turn to him and say, "I will not wear your ring. I will not tell people I'm your wife. I'm married to you on paper until I can fix that," was very empowering.
And that's what I think. Once you make that decision, it doesn't happen immediately for most of us. I don't know too many women who say, "Oh, this is what happened. This is what you are. Well, get out. We're over." I think, you know, it doesn't happen automatically. Would you say that's right?
That's absolutely right. And a big part of it is, you know, I'm married. At the time, I had four kids living at home that I knew he would not cooperate with me as a co-parent. He would not be an easy person to divorce. I also knew he was going to bring in all the legal support and financial backing he could to ensure he won in every way in court and in public opinion. I knew it was going to be just a battle, and it was scary to think about that. It was scary to think of what I was preparing to give up, not my marriage, because by then I knew it was a sham, but I knew I would lose all the financial investment, all my time with my children. It was just going to be gone. It wasn't the kind of thing that made me say, I'm just going to jump right in and do this.
When he realized it, did he try to talk you out of it? Or?
Yes. He tried really hard to talk me out of it. And but more than trying to change my mind, he just wanted to make sure nobody else knew what was going on. He didn't want me to say anything to anyone because he said, people will think we're having trouble. I said, we're not having trouble. We're getting divorced. So, yeah, he really did not want me to leave.
Did he blame the breakup of the marriage on you?
Absolutely, he did. When we finally got divorced, he filed for divorce before I could, because legally I could not, based on the regulations in our state at the time. And he filed saying that I had abandoned him. So, yeah, it was all my fault.
So, in retrospect, from what you've learned in your own experiences, I know that you're a tremendous support to a lot of women. And what are some of the things that you tell them when they say to you, Chris, do you have any advice? What kind of advice do you give them? Based on what your own experience was.
The first advice I give is, if you think he's probably gay, he's absolutely gay. That's not the kind of thing that you're going to think, and it's wrong. Because now that I've been with a straight man, they're nothing alike. They're not at all like a gay man. And more important than that, if you're married to someone who doesn't make you feel like you matter to them, it's because you don't matter to them. So don't live like that. Don't give your life away. I was 40 when I realized that I had to leave, and 45 by the time I was divorced. And for the longest time, I would look back at the more than 20 years that I was shackled to this man and think, I gave my life and soul and years that I'll never get back to someone who never treasured them. He just used them. So don't do that. Just get out.
I think the first thing I try to tell women is that every day you lose of yourself to a man, a marriage to a gay man, is a day that you're never going to get back.
Right.
It's over.
It's not like you're
giving
him a real treasure.
Right. But I'm saying, you're miserable, you're unhappy, and, I know that there were years that you spent in that marriage feeling totally alone, isolated, betrayed. All the emotional impacts of, someone who is just giving you the worst time, and yet you stayed because for whatever reasons, but, in retrospect, if you would have left 10 years earlier, I always think, look how much happier your life could have been.
Absolutely.
And I know that not everybody feels like they can leave, but I always tell women it's a good opportunity. Once you make up your mind that you're going to leave, you have to, of course, make a game plan so that you're okay, that you don't come out totally losing on the end financially. Take advantage and go to school. Take a course. Something doesn't have to be 4 years or 6 years or 8 years. It could be some short-term training so that you can be financially independent. I think that's really important that you feel that you can support yourself. Was that an issue for you?
It was. I had a college degree, but I had a degree in English, which is not really the most valuable thing in a cow town like where we were living. So, yeah, it was very difficult for me to find work that would enable me to support myself, let alone provide for my children in any meaningful way. So, absolutely, find a way to support yourself. But don't let your concerns about your finances keep you in that marriage. My oldest son and I lived together for a couple of years after I first moved out, and we had some really lean times. But every night I could go to sleep and know that nobody was going to hassle me. I could wake up and do what I wanted with my day, and no one was going to criticize me for what I looked like or how I spoke or anything like that. And the freedom was absolutely the best thing. I'm still thrilled.
I think there's nothing worse than going to bed crying at night because you feel bad about yourself, bad about your marriage, because you're so desperately trying to make something work that's just not workable, and internalizing the blame, because many of these men, you know, they put the blame on you because they're unhappy and they're frustrated in the marriage and they're not taking responsibility for what the real problem is. It's much easier
right.
to blame you, the nagging wife. You know, you should get your act together. And why are you so unsupportive? Why are you so uninteresting? Why are you always thinking of the kids first? You know, they'll come up with a 50 million ways to punish you for them being gay, rather than just saying, look, this is what it is. And so many of the women that I work with, I really do believe in my heart that their husbands would just be honest with them up front and say, look, I have a problem. And I do work with, you know, hundreds of these men each year and helping them be honest and come out to their wives. And I say, the longer you drag it on, the longer it's going to be, the more she's going to, and more angry she's going to be. You know, it's not going to go away.
And justifiably so. They are stealing
exactly
our prime years.
Yep, they're years that should be filled with happiness and fulfillment and contentment. Instead, they're years filled with unhappiness, suspicion. You know, and like you say, when you gaslight, or I call it gaylight someone, to make them think that there's nothing wrong with them, it's you, and you're imagining it, and you do start questioning yourself and questioning your sense of judgment. Am I reading this right? Maybe I'm seeing something that's not there, especially when they tell you must be crazy, because I hear that a lot. Women say, well, they told us we must be crazy. I mean, a commonality with these guys who don't want to admit who they are or what they are, as they bring home all kinds of sexually transmitted diseases to their wife. I mean, I had a woman in my group, you know, a few years ago, and it was just so depressing to me. This poor woman went through everything. She had herpes. She had, you know, several other STDs. And she was young when she got married, and people didn't know what they know today. But she would come home to her husband because she was sick and say, well, I have an STD, and he would be yelling at her and hitting her. How dare you cheat on me? I mean, you know, how bad is that when you have to hear a story like that, when he's the one who's been out there cheating and betraying her and saying, you know, I know you're cheating on me. She would never think to cheat on him. But you just live in these situations that are so emotionally abusive, and it doesn't have to be a physically abusive situation to feel sick over something every single day. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, did you face physical abuse in your marriage?
That's the one thing he didn't do. He did everything but hit me. And for the longest time, I would say, well, he doesn't hit me, so maybe I'm okay.
Well, or maybe he's okay.
Yeah.
At least he doesn't hit me, so maybe he's not that bad. And those are, you know, we didn't understand for all the stuff that they have out today about emotional abuse and narcissism. And groups like Don Anderson's of Love Fraud, and, you know, there's so many groups out there and leaders in the movement of, you know, fraudulent love that we understand so much more now. But I know them when I was growing up, for sure, and probably not too much when you were growing up, did we hear this terminology, right?
Yeah, not ever. But then again, I didn't really think I needed to know anything about that, right? I hadn't seen marriages like that had stuff going on.
So, did you think your marriage was different from other people's, like while you were going through it?
I thought I didn't complain as much as a lot of other women. I felt really good about that. That in fact, when I divorced my husband, the first response that most of my girlfriends had was, "You never said anything negative about him. What's going on?" So yeah, I felt like I had the moral high road for a long time. And you know, my marriage was not the loving, passionate experience that I had expected and hoped for. But I figured, you know, nobody guarantees you anything. There were a lot of other problems. As I mentioned before, he has alcohol and drug abuse issues and the basic dishonest narcissistic personality. So he was a real prize all around. But I felt like I had made a commitment and I was going to stick it through, and almost did. You know, I could have died married to that man, and I'm glad I didn't.
Your life has moved on to a much, much better place. And as you mentioned a little bit, you had some struggles in the beginning where you were, you know, with your teenage son and things were really tight and having to just readjust to being on your own after so many years, which even though you say was wonderful, it's still an adjustment. But your decision that you were ready to find love, you know, came after your marriage. Can you talk a little bit about that?
For a while, I was still living in the basement of the marital home, and I was working at an extremely low-paying job and looking for a better job. I knew all I had to do was find a better job, and then I could move out. One of the big perks of the job I had, I was working on a naval installation, and so, of course, we were right there on the beach, and every day after work, I would leave work and know that I had to go home and deal with him, and I wasn't ready to do that, so I would go to the beach right there near work, and I'd walk there for about an hour and yell at the ocean, you know, I'm going to make this better, what's so hard about this? Why have I been in this crappy situation? All I need, and then I would give the beach, you know, I would tell the ocean, all I need is a better job and a place to live and a decent man, and I would give, like, my demand list to the universe. You know, I wasn't really good at those sweet, submissive prayers that a lot of people do. I basically stood there next to the seagulls cursing at the top of my lungs and telling the universe they needed to get things straight and give me what I wanted. And it did. It worked.
So how long did that take?
Well, maybe 8 months of just demanding it, not really seeing it, not even really looking for it. I was too busy looking for work to look for a man. And, in fact, that's one of the things I said on the beach. You know, you better find somebody and stick them right under my feet because I'm not looking. I've got a job to do. And then the guy who I am now with ended up working in an office directly under my feet. So there you go.
There you go. Your prayers were answered, right?
Kind of, yeah. Or I made magic or I don't know what happened, but it's still good.
Now, it wasn't something that was a rush because he was away in the service, right?
Yes, we dated for a few months, and then he left the country for 2 years, and we Skype dated while he was in the Middle East. And then he came back here and moved in with me.
So during that period of time when you first started meeting him again, did you have a lot of issues from your marriage that you brought into the relationship?
Absolutely, and I still do. We've been together for about 4.5 years. But the first thing for me is I was just used to there being an agenda. I was used to having to figure out what's really going on. So here I found myself dating this man who's very straightforward. He will tell you what he thinks, how he feels, what matters to him. And what he said today is the same thing he said 6 months ago, is the same thing he'll say 5 years from now, because none of it is a lie. So for a while, you know, he would say something and I'd think, well, what does that mean? You know, what do you mean you like that dress on me? Should I change? You know? And I had to learn to take a compliment. I've had to learn to take attention and affection. We joke that I'm kind of feral You know, I've been living like a barn cat, and I've had to learn to let people pet me. And so it's an adjustment.
And do you say that trust was one of the biggest issues?
I think he's naturally trustworthy, but I think trusting myself was very difficult. I was afraid that I wouldn't be able to be in a relationship with a normal person. And I was, I also have had to learn how not to expect punishment. When he had just come back from overseas, and his car was still in shipment, because it takes the military a couple months to get all your stuff to you. So I would go to work, and he would use my car sometimes. And my car was an old piece of crap, and I knew it was going to fall apart any day. But at the time, I didn't have any money to really get a new one. And one night, he was driving my car out to go to class about an hour from where we lived, and my car broke down. So he called me, and I talked to him about it, and I helped him find a tow truck driver and all that. And as I was waiting for him to come home, I went into a blind panic, and I started, like, cleaning the apartment, and, you know, let me cook something, and let me brush my teeth. Oh, my God, he's going to be furious with me because I sent him out there in a busted car. And he came home, and he basically said, no, I'm not angry with you. You've got a car that doesn't really work well because you got no money. And I drove it, and it broke down when I was driving it, and that has nothing to do with you. And I was overwhelmed with relief, because if something like that had happened in my marriage, it would have been entirely my fault, and I would have gotten cursed out, and I probably would have had several days of the silence treatment, and it would have been a terrifying experience. So in the beginning, when we first started living together, that was a big adjustment for me. There's no other shoe that's going to drop. I have to get used to the fact that I'm not under siege with this new man.
I think it's a big adjustment learning how to fit into a new normal when you haven't had the normal to start with.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're with someone who's
it's
expecting
weird.
Normal, right?
Yeah, and I explained to him, you know, I was never a fan of keeping my past a secret. My boyfriend knew everything that I could tell him the minute I could tell him it, because as I explained it to him, I want you to know why I'm weird. Things are going
to
happen.
Did it explain it to him?
You need to know. I think it does.
Did it explain it for him?
I think it does. And also, you know, over time, he's been able to observe how my children are and how my friends talk about my ex. And it all confirms to him that, yep, she was in a crazy situation. But
well, he's a very special man, because I know
that,
you know, just looking at loving pictures of both of you all the time, you know, it's such a wonderful thing to see that you had success in making a new life for yourself, which was not easy, and making the adjustments, first of all, of being away. I remember during those years when you were Skyping him far away and thinking, is this really going to work when he comes back, you know, because you never know.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, it was scary for him. I mean, we'd been going out maybe 6 months when he left the country, and I thought, well, you know, a week from now, I'll know. Either he'll be Skyping with me or he won't. And, I was very open-handed about the whole thing, because I really didn't know what to expect.
I know. It was such a happy ending, because, you know, I felt the anticipation when he was coming home, and you were counting down the weeks, and then you were counting down the days, you know, that you will be together again. And it's just been such a beautiful story that I think it's important for women to understand that there is hope, that you can find yourself again. Which, do you
Absolutely.
Think that was part of this, Chris, was finding who you really were before you could be that involved with someone?
I think that is part of it. I think it has it has helped, been good for me to know what I will not put up with ever again. It made it easy for me to look at him and say, you're nothing like my ex-husband. So I can consider this, you know, we can give this a shot. But I mean, I certainly didn't have everything all sewn up when I met him. And I still have emotional baggage that he's helping me unpack. It's great to have somebody in your life who will do that with you. But yeah, I think if you go into the dating pool without having given any thought to what's going on in your own head and heart, yeah, it probably would make it a lot harder. I mean, one of the benefits, you could say, of me having such a hard time getting divorced because my ex-husband fought it so hard, it took me years to get divorced. And during that time, I worked on myself. And I think that probably made it easier for me to date once I started.
Right, because I really think that when we come out of these marriages, we often don't love ourselves enough to stop ourselves from making another terrible mistake. And you really have to work on yourself first to learn who you are or relearn who you were. I mean, some women never even know because they went from a bad childhood into a bad marriage without really getting to know who they were. Just being a caretaker and taking care of everything because that was the role that they were given in their life. And sometimes you have toxic relationships with parents. You can have narcissistic parents or destructive parents that impact your whole way of thinking about yourself, and then you move into a relationship that just compounds that and, you know, doubles it over. And some of our women never really had a chance to know who they really are. And then when it's time to go out and meet somebody because they feel, well, I'm ready. No, they're not ready. And they pick the wrong person and they inevitably get hurt because there are so many predators out there, as I always say. And I don't mean gay predators. I mean predators in general. Men from all different social, you know, situations in life who are looking for women to prey on. You know,
absolutely,
they're not very nice men. And they look for women who are vulnerable and weak. And that's why so many of our women become victims the second time, because they're just so needy to be loved, which is understandable. After coming out of one of these marriages, you do want to find someone to love you. But you often jump without looking and seeing who it is who's going to love you. So I think women really do have to be overly careful. Would you say so on that one?
Absolutely. And I also think that we need to not make that our number one priority coming out of these marriages. You know, I was young when I met my, I was 19 when I met my ex-husband, and we were married until I was in my 40s. I had very little experience with men. And I didn't go into my post-marital life thinking I'm going to find a second husband. I said, I'm going to live my life. I'm going to have some fun. And then I, you know, met my boyfriend, and that has worked out really well. But I didn't go into even that relationship at the beginning thinking this has to last for the rest of my life. Now that we've been together for a while, yes, this is going to last the rest of my life. But I wasn't demanding that the next guy who asks me out for coffee has to be ready to make a commitment to me, because I needed some room to breathe, and so do they.
Absolutely. I think that's why it's so important not to rush into something before you're ready for it. But
yep,
it certainly has.
Meet men, have fun, and then let it go.
And women can go out and just have fun. You don't have to be committed to every man that you meet, right?
Right.
You know, it's part of the dating experience is meeting someone to have a good time with. But if not, keep looking for somebody. I always say, you know, keep searching for your soulmate till he comes along. Because if you really want to meet him, he's out there to meet. And you can't give up.
Right.
And you can't give in. You have to keep searching. And you can't expect he's going to show up at your doorstep, even though yours came up to your right below you. You know, I know. But that was a fluke, Chris. It doesn't happen for most women that way, right?
Oh, no.
So we've learned.
Heck, it seems like a fluke even to me.
Good. Yeah, so women, don't expect that that guy's going to show up the floor underneath you. That probably won't be happening. You got to go out there and find him. But if you don't look, you're never going to find. And you can't be looking right. before you're ready. And you have to get ready and take your time to get to know yourself and love yourself first. Because that's what it's like when you have to come out of these marriages feeling so unworthy, unloved. And now you just can't have somebody jump into your door to fulfill that need, because that's never going to happen. I say if you're not strong enough to love yourself, nobody else is going to love you. They're going to use you, but they're not going to love you. Would you say that's
right.
pretty true?
I think that's true. And really, it started out for me being able to tolerate myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel pretty good about myself now most days, but at the beginning, yeah, it was just, can I look myself in the mirror and not crying?
And I think that's very true, too, that we learn that all the things that have been put down about us, that we have to really reroot our minds and our thinking and take out some of those negative messages that have been imparted on us through years and years of marriage and start putting things back in order. You know, it's almost like dumping out a trash can and then having to put every good thing clean and neat in there. But you have to take the right time that it takes to do that, or otherwise you're never going to be ready when you do meet your soulmate.
Right.
And I'm so happy
to kind of
met
thing
yours.
For me, at least, it wasn't something that I had to do once. I've had to do it over and over again, you know, remind myself that that person at work said something nice about my work. It's because they think I did a good job. It's not because they're trying to mess with my head, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many areas of life.
And maybe when you come back next time, we can talk about some of them, Chris, and you can give some good input to help women,
yeah,
you know, figure that out. Yep. So I'll look forward to having you back here before the holidays to give women our encouragement and hope. And I really would appreciate that. So we're now coming down to the end of our show, because whenever you're on here, it just seems to run fast. And there's so much to say. I'm really sorry that it's over so fast. But I really appreciate your being here. Send that love out to all of our women. Come to our healing weekends and start that healing process. You know, the healing weekend, like I said, will be in Philadelphia. Maybe you'll be able to make it back, Chris, at least for a day.
I bet I can.
That would be wonderful. And so you can meet the women in our group and share your stories and cry your tears and laugh, because we're funny too and we have a lot of laughs. But just seeing that you have that support. And once again, for the healing weekends, there's no charge except for your travel and for the room, which is always at a discounted price. So it's a really great deal to treat yourself to something that you need to help you move on in your healing process. So to all of our women who are out there and listening, I say love to all of you. Chris, I love you, and thank you for everything you do for so many people. You're such an inspiration all of the time. And I'll look forward to having you back here.
I can't wait to come back, Bonnie.
All right, thanks so
much.
As soon
as you're ready, I'm back.
All right, we'll be before the holidays to inspire the women. Thank you so much. And ladies, have a great week, and we'll end with our song, Blackbird. Well, maybe we won't end with that. Well, ladies, sorry about that. I'm just trying to get that song going. But maybe we try another one.
I can't teach you anything.
Please, teacher, teach me something. Nice teacher, teach me something. I'm as awkward as a camel. That's not the worst. My 2 feet haven't met yet, but I'll be teacher's pet yet, 'cause I'm going to learn to dance on birds.
Nothing's impossible, I have found. When my chin is on the ground, I pick myself up, dust myself off,
all over again.
Don't lose your confidence if you slip. Be grateful for a pleasant trip and pick yourself up, dust yourself off, start all over again. Work like a soul in
fire.
The battle of the day is won. You may be sick and tired,
but be a man, my son.
Will you remember the famous men who had to fall to rise again? So take a deep breath. yourself up. Dust yourself off. Start all over again.
I'll get some self-assurance if your endurance is great.